and welcome to the Hear It podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Roberts, and I'll be speaking with guests about the campaigns, insights and ideas to better engage youth audiences. I really hope you like it. This episode, we welcome Ben Verinder to the podcast. Ben is the MD of Chalkstream, a specialist reputation research and management agency who's worked with over 100 colleges, universities and schools, as well as a host of other clients, and recently spoke at the All Parliamentary Project Group for Skills, Careers and Employment. PR and poetry complements all of this, and if you follow him on socials, you'll know he's leading a battle against Meta for blocking tribute acts on their platform, but that's perhaps a conversation for another episode. Ben, thank you very much for joining us on the Hear It podcast.
Hi, Rebecca. Thanks for inviting me.
There's a lot we could talk about, but I wanted to bring you on specifically to talk about the challenge that further education sector has at the moment. Before we get into the current issues, can you talk to us a little bit about the challenge of marketing and communications within the FE sector, not least down to the diverse groups that colleges need to attract?
Yeah, I mean, that is a core challenge for a sector that serves everybody from 14 to till the grave, really. There are hundreds of thousands of students within the FE sector who are adult students who are beyond, you know, over the age of 19. And the core market sort of splits in this way. About 80% of business is really 16 to 18 year olds, predominantly what's called level three courses, so A levels and vocational equivalents, so BTECs and courses like that. There's quite a lot of work done on GCSE resits as well for those students that didn't pass their maths and English GCSEs. So that's a slightly different market there. And then there's this quite incredibly large and varied adult market, which is served through professional courses, so often perhaps 1 year accountancy courses or leadership and management courses, so specialist professional courses, sometimes hybrid, sometimes exclusively online, but typically in person. And then quite a considerable level of what's called level four, level five courses. So those are things like HNDs, HNCs, foundation degrees, and some level six or degree equivalent or degree qualifications. And those markets differ quite considerably. And then in that mix, even more complex, you have things like English as a second language, ESOL courses for people who are looking to improve their English skills, their core English skills, and then specialist maths and sort of foundation skill courses as well. So it's a real heady mix. And what that brings with it, as you suggested in your question, is a considerable diversity of market, which is very heterogeneous and very difficult to engage with in terms of market research, never mind actual marketing activities.
Yeah, it feels sometimes a bit with colleges that they're expected to solve so many problems, societal problems. So you've got the normal kind of progression into further education, higher education, but then different schemes that pop up, whether that's, you know, apprenticeships or whether that's, you know, retraining skills. And it's just, it's quite a complex market. It's not the same as the university sector at all, really.
No, if you compare it against, there's a product issue, but there's also a policy issue. So if you think about schools, typically they've got two core, you know, products, typically GCSEs and A-levels at a secondary level. And then if you think about universities, they've got, again, one core, perhaps two core products, so sort of an honours degree and then a postgraduate offer, typically at MA, MSc, but obviously then onto a PhD. But the degree element of that is easy to conceptualise. And school, again, is a universal experience in a way that a college is not. And product-wise, as I mentioned earlier on, you know, you've just got this incredible array of products. So familiarity with the offer is typically, it's a real challenge. It's a challenge just amongst the market, never mind amongst policymakers. But you've also got, bluntly put, considerable amounts of policy churn, which produces new qualifications and new initiatives. Sometimes that's driven by political will, in which politicians are looking to make their mark or make a change. And the fairly ridiculous cycle of political change in which and parliamentary terms. So you have ministers introducing concepts which then lead to new qualifications or new schemes and a proliferation of neologisms and new elements, which again confuses and dilutes the market typically. And there's limited consistency over time of what you might call the product base. And, you know, you've got challenges with familiarity amongst amongst your core stakeholders slash market and real challenges with understanding of how the system works. One of the few mentioned apprenticeships, one of the few schemes, programs that's had consistent political attention and consistent healthy funding over time is apprenticeship. But that is facing a considerable challenge with, particularly with employers who are spending it on things that you would hope they wouldn't spend it on up until recently, on you know, degree level training for their own employees, as opposed to hiring new people aged 16 to 19.
You mentioned some of the big challenges there. So why is it so hard for the FE sector right now? And what, in your opinion, are some of the biggest institutional challenges they face?
Well, it's predominantly not just the policy landscape, which is too turbulent, but it's also a funding package which is insufficient. So essentially, you know, comparative to other sectors, FE has fared quite poorly. One might argue that that's because politicians do not consider that FE as an investment package is a vote winner compared to schools, early years and HE, because of the demographic it serves. But also there's been a overall sort of flatlining of 16 to 19, so sixth form funding. And again, because of the high proportion of funding, that's sort of 80% of FE funding, that's massively affected colleges. So it's essentially just a flatlined against inflation and essentially reduced in terms of money in the pocket for the college, which means that some of the investment in professional services like marketing communications just hasn't been there. There's been a forced, bluntly put, a forced set of mergers and acquisitions across the sector, which has led to further turbulence, which then again affects marketing because some of the entities and the brands that existed in the market have disappeared, and there's limited time for, you know, your local stakeholders slash potential students to familiarise themselves with a new offer, a new name, a new group, etc. So you've got a lot of mess in terms of what you might call the brand proposition.
Yeah, and as we saw in 2008 after the financial crash, the demand for more education, like either those staying in it or those work accessing to support, sort of retraining or reevaluating their career options. We've seen a similar pattern in recent years of post-COVID and financial challenges. Recent government data shows 19 plus FE and skills participation is up almost 6% from 2021-22, and adult education and training participation up again almost 8% as well. Community learning is up over 10%. So on the face of it, it looks like the FE market is booming, but is that just part of the problem?
No, it's, well, unpicking those statistics is a complex task that you probably don't want me to do in terms of detail for this podcast, but just to sort of, some of that is a reflection on post-COVID numbers and growth of following a significant decline. So for instance, community learning absolutely smashed by the pandemic and is recovering. So some of that growth there is growth following a significant slump. So on a larger trajectory, if you're looking at further years, I'm afraid it's not a happy picture. And that's the same, I'm afraid, for adult participation beyond more recent statistics. So if you look at the Adult Participation and Learning Survey and the work of the Learning and Work Institute, so this is a survey and study done over 25, 29 years, I think. I can't remember, it's sort of a quarter of a decade. Brilliant study, 5,000 people. If you're in FE marketing or involved in it or interested in adult learning in particular, I commend it to you wholeheartedly because it's a really well-sampled, well-thought-out study. And it unpicks essentially what's happening with adult learning in England and Wales predominantly. And unfortunately, the picture is not as rosy as we might understand from those recent stats. Overall, it's a decline over the last 4 or 5 years. Barriers are typically time, money, working status, opportunities. So in other words, can you get to a learning centre? It's not all terrible news. I want to be sort of bright and cheerful if I can in certain areas. So growth in ESOL in particular and high levels of demand and certain, say, for instance, level 3 qualifications that we know of in the market. So those BTEC or equivalent qualifications that are doing really well, a lot of mental health and health and social care qualifications to help people become nurses, high demand for them. Engineering sector qualifications, IT qualifications that are going through the roof. So it does depend to some extent as well for adult education on what you're delivering in terms of subject area and what qualification type you're delivering. And apprenticeships overall, again, say for instance, apprenticeships in IT, we've done recently undertook a study on this, really healthy growth there, a very popular way of recruiting new recruits, actually, the apprenticeship provision. So parts of the FE market are booming. I'm afraid the overall picture for adults is not so bright and cheery.
And I think it's no secret that it's increasingly competitive for colleges, not least because schools kind of recognise the value of keeping their students kind of learning for longer in the school setting, if possible. What are some of the solutions for the sector as a whole, you know, and within marketing communications to kind of tackle that competitive landscape?
Well, let's talk, you know, we started talking about different markets. So let's talk about this in relation to different types of potential student. So we talk about school students, for instance, and school liaison. We undertake a lot of research helping colleges in particular try to understand why students have applied to them but gone somewhere else or decided to stay on at their school from GCSE into sixth form. So we speak to many hundreds of students who've decided to stay at school rather than go to their local college. And often the suspicion of the college is that there's some nefarious work at play in relation to the school seeking to provide partial advice to its pupils in order to keep them there. The reality is actually slightly less sort of murky and slightly less immoral. Often we find that colleges under-communicate with their feeder schools and their potential school market. So bluntly put, school liaison is not as strategic or as impactful or as well-resourced as it should be, because overall it's a very effective marketing and communications activity for recruitment post-GCSE. And many colleges undercook it in terms of effort and particularly strategic attention. So it can't just be delivered by a school liaison function. It has to be supported by a curriculum manager and curriculum leads to deliver, for instance, in-school taster sessions or delivering in-college experiences for those school pupils. It needs to start often at a much earlier age than is delivered currently by many colleges. So I'll give you some example of good practice. Wigan and Lee College has a specific engagement program for primary schools, so year six, but also early secondary school engagement with its feeder school partners, which is really what every college around the country should be doing. There needs to be a menu of school liaison activities for a school to engage with. So the school needs to have choice about the different types of activities it might engage with a college. And I know, for instance, Milton Keynes College Group is extremely good at providing a wide range of different activities and options in terms of school liaison. In terms of, let's pick another market, a general adult market looking for professional courses. So let's say 1 year advanced accountancy courses, AAT courses are a very big offer in this area. Where colleges struggle is in effective search engine optimization. We know through our market research, through our research and through a wealth of other studies, that professionals looking for those kinds of courses, their primary channel for search is online search, and therefore SEO is absolutely fundamental to the marketing effort. We also know that there's the genie is out of the bottle in terms of online delivery and hybrid courses. So if colleges, if the product isn't right and you're offering a face-to-face only offer in a professional market that's full of hybrid courses, then I'm afraid your competitors are going to beat you to it. I could talk forever about all the different things you could do, because they do differ depending upon the market and the product that you are engaged with, which is the core problem that we're discussing here, this complexity of the provision and the offer that these institutions have to deliver. And I'm not even starting to talk about some of the other things you mentioned, Rebecca, which is all about the social duty of colleges. One of the things that we have to remember is that colleges are not just an education institution. They are community assets that have social and economic functions as well. So they've got lots of roles in delivering to the local economy through supporting employers and employee engagement. You know, they have roles in hosting, providing accommodation for local charities, in business engagement as an anchor institution for social welfare initiatives. You know, it's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, it's such a complex market. From your experience of working in the sector, how do successful colleges take the lead when it comes to engaging young people in particular and providing positive experiences?
Well, let's focus on the young people issue then, and let's think about form and function. The disappointing slash sort of sad truth of it is you do need to have a certain level of budget in order to effectively operate as a marketing communications function within the further education sector. That's because even if you are delivering exclusively to a 16 to 19 market, you firstly are faced with changes in government policy that allowed for the expansion of school sixth forms. So even if schools are being extremely moral and are providing impartial good careers guidance and pointing their students towards a college, mathematically you have a higher proportion of students with a possibility of moving into their school sixth form. Somewhat ironically, given that the smaller the sixth form, the worse the performance below, particularly below 250 pupils, you need this level of budget because you're fighting against status quo bias. You're fighting against a greater proportion of pupils who've got the choice of staying on. So you need to spend more to try and break through status quo bias. Again, this is this heuristic where it's we'd rather stay where we are than move somewhere. But you're also looking at a world in which, for that market, digital advertising is required, and that requires a certain level of investment both in the technology and in the evaluation and monitoring. It's sophisticated stuff. You need to understand your market. You need to understand, say, for instance, social media channels in which those young people are present. And here's the kicker: those channels change on a not irregular basis. So, you know, we are going to be looking at a new Snapchat within X amount of years, and you have to shift your investment and some of your expertise and training across from, you know, an area of experience and expertise to a totally new channel. So yeah, there are just considerable pressures on you that require a level of investment that unfortunately many colleges struggle to make. And they really struggle to make it in the communications area, which is my background. Investment in relation to public relations is particularly problematic. So stakeholder relations is something that they really struggle with. And there's no investment in employer engagement, as in from government. So if you are delivering business development, employer engagement in a college setting, you're doing so via a function that isn't separately funded by government, for instance. So it's taking money away from the front line, so to speak, is the argument. But it's essential if you want to deliver a curriculum that is employer responsive, if you want to have work experience, which is, you know, there's a new qualification called T-Levels, which is essential. A 45-day placement is actually, you know, a core part of that. You can't deliver it without that. What's that got to do with marketing? Well, you know, all of that activity underpins marketing as well. So marketing is a collective organisational effort as well. It also requires you as a marketing function to have the capacity and the resources to corral and manage the marketing effort across the piece, which actually also extends to product quality. And I keep saying product. I don't see education as a product. I just can't think of a better word. It's much more complicated, nuanced and important than that. But we are talking in terms of through the prism of marketing functions.
You've mentioned some research earlier, which I will put up in the show notes. Are there any books, talks or podcasts that you would recommend to help us better understand anything you've talked about today?
As I mentioned before, the APL, the Adult Participation in Learning Study by Learning and Work, is actually really good work done by Gatsby in this area. They're full disclosure, they're a client of ours. But if you're really interested in studies in relation to technical education, and particularly level 4 and level 5, Gatsby have some really good studies. But to be fair to the Department for Education, they've got a really good strong library of different further education and vocational education studies. So that would be my first port of call if I was new to this market. There's a network called the College Marketing Network, which does a really good job of convening college marketing marketeers. I'm the former communications director of the Association of Colleges, and my first ever job in 2003 was to create a network of marketing and communications professionals in colleges, and that, under the auspices of the AOC, still exists, and there's an annual conference that they run. So I definitely commend that.
And what's the one stereotype about young people that you think should get in the bin?
I love going to visit colleges because when you walk through the door, you get this incredible sense of energy, enthusiasm, and capacity for growth in those institutions that is almost overwhelming, actually, when you walk in there. I have been in times in my career where I've had to advise colleges about opposition to, let's say, for instance, developing new buildings, because, bluntly put, local residents don't like teenagers. You know, I can think of a variety of different case studies. Just cite one, in which was a really good campaign, in which it was a college in London and it was looking to develop a new campus, and it had significant opposition from local residents to the point where it wasn't able to get the planning permission it wanted. So its strategy in addressing that was to send groups of teenagers or its students, just small groups, to knock on the door of people who had put their, you know, it's in the public domain, opposed the development, to introduce themselves and say why they wanted and needed a new building. And they were so eloquent and so brilliant that they and utterly neutralised the opposition to that building. And there was almost no opposition for the second planning permission scale. My point being is that young people are far more impressive and interesting and, yeah, cool to hang out with than many of us in our age and dote think. You know, they're a pretty interesting group of people to engage with. And I'm not sure any of us, including myself, quite appreciate that until we walk in those kind of buildings.
Yeah, teenagers get a really bad rep. Thanks for listening to the Hear It podcast. If you like what you heard, please rate, review and subscribe, as it really helps others find us. You can also follow us on Twitter @HearItPodcast or drop us a message by emailing info@threadandfable.com.